Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Lapointe-Vin Group conference call. If at any time during this call you need immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. I would now like to turn the conference over to David Lapointe-Vin. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Okay, let's go here. I just want to again thank my staff who's been working really long hours and have been unbelievable, and some have been working from home, some from here, and it's been fantastic. I've got my partners here, Mark and Fletcher and Darcy. Aaron in research is here on the call. You guys have been awesome. If our voices are hoarse, it's not because we have COVID, it's because we've never talked so much in our careers. So again, thanks for that. Last time we spoke on the conference was April 30th. A lot of the stuff I'm going to go through might be a repeat, but I'll maybe come at you in a different way. Just to recap where we are for the year, the Dow Gen 1 was about 28,500. It was up 1,000 points in early February. March the 23rd, 18,591, a crash not seen since 1987. We're sitting around 26,000 today, up 7% since our last call, minus 8.5% for the year. The value line index, which actually just tells you pretty much what the average stock is still trading at year to date, is minus 18. The Russell 2000 small mid-cap index is 13.7. Toronto Stock Exchange is minus 9.2. For those of you who went against my recommendation about 30-year bonds on January 1st, congratulations. The yields have gone from 1.75 to 1.02. You've made yourself 11% in the first 6 months of the year. That's kind of a recap of where we are. Canadian dollar is off about a couple of percent. It's rallied recently. I'll get into that because a lot of you, thank you, have emailed in for questions. You know, last time we talked about a lot about this push-pull that we're having. And just to reiterate, what the push-pull we're having from investors is whether the outcome of a crisis is inflationary or deflationary. I get a lot of people that forward me stuff that newsletter writers have written, and they're articulating the deflation case. And the deflation case, the shining example is 1932 to 1937. And the money supply, again, is made up of the monetary base and then the money multiplier. And in the 1930s, the economic depression caused people to hoard cash. People were afraid to leave it in the bank. They pulled it. They put it in their lunch boxes, buried in the backyard. And as such, cash absolutely was the winning trade. Interest rates were zero, just like they are today, but the consumer price index was falling for 5 consecutive years at a 10% annual clip. So money, just sitting on money, made you wealthier. And the people that sort of ran to cash are really kind of articulating that view. And in fact, if we look at the Bank of Canada website, right on the front page is the annual inflation rate. And in fact, it's showing a year-over-year change of minus 0.2 on a negative level. Now, as we know, that's a backward-looking indicator, and in a crisis, it's shocking that we didn't have more deflation. And of course, that represents old data where the price of oil went to zero. In fact, it went below zero. So most of the deflation is coming from that one element of energy. And as you know, we were filling up our cars for almost free, but it was not quite free. They weren't paying us to take the oil, but it was shockingly low. Now, conversely, if you look at grocery prices, they've been surging at their highest pace in 40 years. So we do have this push-pull of inflation-deflation. I want to talk about for a moment, since the last conference call, an interview with Jerome Powell, who was on 60 Minutes in the middle of May. And we talked last time in the call about the code words for printing money because we didn't like to use those words. We use code words like quantitative easing and asset purchases. In the interview on 60 Minutes, Chairman Jerome Powell holds the keys to inflation versus deflation debate, holds the keys. We are just printing money. Those are the words that are, I don't think that those use have ever been used out of code. It's what it is, but we are just printing money. The interviewer asks, aren't there consequences to this? And Jerome Powell pointed out that they have a dual mandate. One is growth, and the other is price stability. And at the end of the day, he said, we're going to deal with that later. And so we'll get into that in a moment. But I want to talk for a second about, you know, what's driving the bus, because I get a lot of questions from clients. The economy is still in recession. Why is the stock market going up? Now, we kind of reiterated that last time. And if I ask people out there to name the best performing stock market in the planet, I asked around and nobody got the correct answer. And the answer is it's the Caracas Stock Exchange in Venezuela. And if you had bought that index on January the 1st, the index was trading at 7,000. Now it's trading at 332,000 for a 46 times on your money. Now, before you all email and say, why wasn't I in the Caracas stock market? The money exchange rate has been halving every few days. So you're not ahead. But the printing of money is floating that boat. You know, the old saying, when the tide comes in, you know, all the boats will rise, whatever the saying is. And, you know, here we are. And if you look at the actual data, we've gone from $15 trillion of money supply to over $18 trillion, and we continue to print on a weekly basis. You know, the old Marty Zweig, which I quote quite often, who was the best market timer that ever lived, rest in peace, Marty, coined the phrase, don't fight the Fed. And in this case, it seems to be the thing that's driving the bus. I look back because I was curious, and I can send you the link if anybody's interested from the St. Louis Fed, but it actually, you can track the money supply on a weekly basis, and you can go back quite a few decades. So I went back 30 years ago. And 30 years ago, the U.S. total money supply was $3 trillion, and as they said, it's over $18 trillion today. The Dow Jones in 1990, in the spring of 1990, hit a new record of 3,000 on the Dow. If you actually look at that and you say, what's the number one driver of this stock market increase in the last 30 years? It's not productivity, it's not anything but money supply has gone up sixfold. Now the Dow, 3,000 to 26,000 is a ninefold increase, but sixfold of that is just money supply. Now you have to be careful because constant, you know, there's more money, are there more stocks? And the answer is no, there is not more stocks. In fact, there's 40%. We had a huge surge in the amount of shares in the 2000s. There were so many dot-com technology shares. Most of those went bankrupt, and, you know, at the end of the day, there's 40% less stocks than there was in 2000. It's about the same number of shares. So here we are today, and again, I use the analogy of a bathtub, and there's a water level. And people, you got to watch, oh, the economic news is bad. I think the market's going down. We are trying to predict the water level. And when they're printing money and they say, don't fight the Fed, even though the data is terrible, the Fed is always the most accommodative when the CNN headline data is negative. Right now, we're trying to, as I say, to guess the water level. All the money that's in the market, think of the water level in a bathtub. And right now the Federal Reserve is refilling that bathtub with a hose that would be big enough to fill a swimming pool. Okay? Now, the reason that it isn't going up at the same rate as the money supply is there's leaks in that. Last month, and again, we watch individual investors because en masse they do the wrong thing. Last month saw the greatest equity mutual fund outflow in history. I'm talking about May, not March, not at the bottom, but clients are so convinced that this stock market advance is not sustainable that they've pulled a record amount of money out of stocks. And where's that money going? I just got the flows yesterday from one of the Canada's exchange-traded fund company called Horizons. And Horizons' number one flow into was the Universal Bond Index, XBB, and the number two was cash, Horizons cash performing ETF. So now we've got all this money that's leaving stocks in favor of cash. So then we got to say, well, you know, are they going to be happy in cash? Now, again, they're happy this year because inflation is zero-ish, and they're not making any money, but that's working. The question is, you know, where does that go, and are they going to be successful in reflating? So since the last call, and last time I started the call with some shocking negative economic data, and the stock market was going up. And this time it's very interesting because we're getting some data that is shocking the market. U.S. jobs for the month of May, we were expecting a loss of 7 million, and that's what the market was said, look, we're in the soup. We're going to have another bad month, but it was actually a 2.5 million increase. Retail sales came in a few days ago in the U.S. and was expected to be at minus 7% as people stayed home and didn't spend. It was the biggest increase in retail, now from a low level, but it was the biggest increase in the history of data, plus 17%. And what we're seeing is it's incredible that if the restaurant is closed, people are out spending. Now, let's remember, people are getting free money all over the place. There isn't a lack of credit. If you had just jettisoned back into the stock markets today and you looked at the credit spreads, the spread on a corporate bond versus government risk-free bond, they are spot on 30-year averages. There is no elevation whatsoever in a credit spread. So you would look, if there was a crisis, those spreads are elevated. Now, they were in March. They've come right back. Citibank has a index, which is a very, very useful leading indicator. And again, when you look at jobs data, you're looking at old data. But the Citibank indicator that is very helpful is called the Economic Surprise Index. And what that tells you is kind of the rate of change of data, because it tells us if the numbers are coming in better than expected or worse than expected. And that gave us a really big clue in 2009 of when that index started moving higher, way before the actual data did, because, again, people project, when you're in a downturn, they project, they finally figured out we're in a downturn. But when does that start to surprise and become in less bad or begin to tick up? So that index, the index itself hit a level of 50 in 2009, which gave us a buy signal. The Citibank Economic Surprise Index hit an all-time record high. The index has never seen a level of 100. That's where we are today. So all the people that are positioning in the bond market and in cash, you know, they're going to have to ask themselves if and when we get, you know, I'm of the belief that we get a vaccine by this time next year And the conspiracy theorist in me, we'll do a lunch bet when this is over. But the conspiracy theory in me says that there's going to be some kind of announcement of a vaccine or close to or final stage before a U.S. presidential election. Just me, but it's just possible because the timeline is getting much closer. There are three very close, very promising results that are in phase three trial where you go to 30,000 people. And they wouldn't, you know, that's happening in record time. We've had a number of questions, and I'll kind of summarize a few of them. One is that people have sent in stuff talking about the valuation of the stock markets. And if you look at even 2021 projections, the market on a price-earnings ratio to some people is looking lofty, and they're saying, well, shouldn't we be pulling money out of stocks? And I would say that, you know, as I point out, the Value Line Index is minus 18%, and the NASDAQ Index, which is reminiscent of 2000, is actually hitting all-time highs. And if we look at the three biggest companies in the world, they are Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft. Microsoft's the biggest. And if we look at the valuation, the price-earnings ratio of these three companies is 61, and the dividend yield is 0.6. And again, I'm not negative on these companies. When you have low rates, it's very cheap to discount future growth, so it's natural that money will continue to flow there until it doesn't. But you're going to have a tough time convincing me that if you bought Verizon today, Southern Company, and Coca-Cola, the price earnings of those three companies is averaging 16. The dividend yield is 4.2%. 10-year bonds yield 0.5 in this country. You're getting 8 times more income out of those three businesses that are weathering this crisis that we're in that will end just fine. And so I think that the question is, where is the opportunity, not where is the, I want to go to cash. The market had its best 50-day run, as the title of the conference suggested. We then had a very swift, over 2 to 3 day, 9% pullback. Again, calls started coming in. I want to go to cash. The hard trade, the hard thing to do is to stay with the program and own good quality businesses. I am worried longer term, and as I've told many of you, just talking to you, I think we're already setting ourselves up for the next crisis. And the next crisis is, how do you fund the $250 billion that Canada's... A deficit, by the way, is issuing bonds. How do you fund $250 billion, 200 provincially, $3.7 trillion in the U.S., roughly $20 trillion in the Western world of bonds need to be issued? The consequence of too much debt will be taxation, and by the way, if you tax people more, they have less money to spend. It hurts economic growth to raise taxes. Taxation, inflation, and higher interest rates, because it is extremely doubtful in the absence of deflation that the world will be able to issue $20 trillion of bonds at 0 to 0.5%. But rates aren't going up anytime soon. In that interview, and subsequent interviews, Jerome Powell holds the keys to the world, has said when this crisis is over, he does not intend to raise rates. He wants to make sure that we get back to those boom times of 3.7% unemployment. He wants inflation higher. He wants inflation well above 2% before they do anything. So, you know, he's talking about not taking away the punch bowl until 2022, which means that the bull market, you know, is going uninterrupted till then. I have my doubts about whether that inflation doesn't spike much before that, but we will, I will watch that carefully, the bond market, the money supply, credit spreads. But for now, the inflation battle seems to be winning. We will monitor this on a day-to-day basis, but it doesn't seem to be playing out as deflation is going to be the way things shake out. The other questions we had quite a few of were on the Canadian dollar. And so that's an interesting question. I would say that if you're in cash, I'm not loving the fact that, you know, to sit in U.S. cash. My long-term view is the Canadian dollar is going to go down, but that is a long-term view. If reflation, if Jerome Powell and the printing of money is successful in recreating inflation, the Canadian dollar does well in an inflationary environment. Okay, we are still viewed in the world as having a higher commodity exposure. So rising oil, rising base metals, rising gold is going to be beneficial to the Canadian dollar. Again, if you're in U.S. stocks look more appealing than Canadian stocks. So that's a different question. But holding U.S. cash may not be such a wise thing to do over the short run unless we think the deflation. Part of deflation, they are deliberately attempting to devalue the U.S. dollar against other currencies. Now, Canada's doing the same thing. We're trying to devalue against everybody. Europe's doing the same. Australia's doing the same. So it's kind of a race to the bottom, which is, you know, leads into my next question that I got from people is, of course, what about gold? And I would say that please, if you need to hold a lot of cash, you need to hold some gold. And I mentioned it last time, the Bank of America report, gold is the only money that can't be printed with an 18-month target of $3,000. Don't buy it because you think you're going to be up 80%. That's not what gold is about. It's about the mining supply of gold goes about 2%. So there's about 2% population growth. And so anything above that on money supply, you know, gold is going to go up again. So I'm going to guess that gold is up roughly sixfold since 1990. I have to look back exactly. I forgot to check that one. But that's just a pure function of the supply of gold versus the supply of U.S. dollars. The supply of U.S. dollars, the supply of Canadian dollars will grow significantly faster than the supply of gold. Therefore, gold becomes a rising asset value. Money becomes a devaluing. When the central bank of the world are deliberately telling us that money is going to lose value, why would we want to be in money? And our job is to protect people's wealth. So, you know, those are the bulk of the questions. Darcy, are you getting any questions from clients that you want to kind of...
I think that covered all of them.
Covers it? Okay, so terrific, guys. Thanks again for sending in the questions. Thanks for client support. And as always, we're all available should you need a little bit more one-on-one stuff. So hang in there, guys, and we'll talk soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the Lapointe & Group conference call for today. We thank you for participating and have a nice day.